to stop reporting. What are you calling for now?
We have been calling since the beginning of the war the international journalistic community to stand strong and take actions. I mean, I think not enough action is being taken by news outlets around the globe. We have seen more pressure being placed on governments and authoritarian regimes back then during the Arab Spring to allow journalists to cover what's happening in Gaza. The fact that no international journalist is allowed to enter Gaza means that you can easily delegitimize any local coverage, as the Israeli government used to do. But if you have an international journalist who is reporting and bringing in eyewitness account of what's happening, that would somehow guarantee the safety of other journalists locally in Gaza. What we are seeing now, Amy, is something is dying in Gaza beyond the bodies. The journalism profession itself is dying. I mean, this profession is meant to eliminate the world and is being buried with its witnesses. 200 journalists in Gaza were killed by Israeli airstrikes. You know, the space their deaths occupy in much of the global media disproportionately small. Sometimes in modern history, news cycles would stop because there is a killing of a journalist. That's not the case right now. Something darker happening right now. They're not targeting a journalist by starvation or bullet or airstrike. What we are seeing now is silencing the coverage, the whole coverage. They went after Al Jazeera because we are the only international organization covering the conflict from the front line. They went after us in Jerusalem, shutting down our office, went after us in West Bank, shutting down our office, went after our colleagues, killed our colleagues, reporting, bringing an eyewitness account from the ground. So it's really alarming for the whole international journalistic community. The profession is under siege in Gaza. The profession is under attack. The fact that you're not able to report on what's going on means that in coming days, when a dictatorship commits crimes and no one is talking about, he will be immune of any international pressure placed on.
Mohammed Mouawad, I want to thank you for being with us, managing editor of Al Jazeera. We're speaking to him in Washington, D.C. And again, from all of us at Democracy Now, our deepest condolences on the death of your five-member team right outside Al Jazeera Hospital. It is not only a Al-Shifa Hospital. It is a loss, not only, of course, though, to Al Jazeera, but to all of us as journalists, to the whole community around the world. Thank you so much for being with us. When we come back, this is not aid. This is orchestrated killing. We'll speak with the head of Doctors Without Borders, who's talking about the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, calling for its closure. Stay with us.
I've been thinking about greed, trying to find a way to talk about greed.
Greed is a poison rising in the land, the soul of the people twisted in its command. It moves like a virus, seeking out everyone. Greed never stops, it work is never ever done. A creeping, choking, killing, invading.
Greed by Sweet Honey and the Rock, performing in our old firehouse studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, has called for the closure of the shadowy Israeli U.S.-backed aid centers in Gaza. Some 1,400 Palestinians have been killed since May trying to access food since the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation took over aid delivery. A new MSF report titled, "This is not aid, this is orchestrated killing," gathers testimony from its medics and others about the targeting of Palestinians seeking food at GHF distribution sites, which are in direct proximity to where MSF operates two healthcare centers. This comes as the U.S. says it wants to scale up to have the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation operate 16 aid sites. For more, we go to Avril Benoit, Chief Executive Officer of Doctors Without Borders, Medecins Sans Frontières USA. Their new report again, "This is not aid, this is orchestrated killing." Avril, welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain exactly what you're calling for and what the medics on the ground, since you have adjacent medical clinic sites, have described happening as pamphlets are dropped telling Palestinians where to go for aid. And when they go there, so many of them, well, more than 1,400 of them, have been shot dead since May.
The reason that Doctors Without Borders, or as we're known internationally, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is calling for the closure of the GHF, and we don't even dare use the word humanitarian, because it's not humanitarian. They're essentially death traps. So every time they have a distribution, the clinics are receiving mass casualty number of patients who are shot, or they are suffering from lacerations from barbed wire around the sites, or injuries from the stampedes that inevitably happen, because the way the GHF functions is so disorganized, so it seems negligent, intentionally negligent, reckless, that people get injured. And so even, we have stories in our report of children also being shot. We treated an 8-year-old girl with gunshot wounds to the chest and a 5-year-old boy with severe head trauma, both of them injured near these GHF sites. And we know that it's linked to the distribution events because they all come in at once. All these patients come in at once and they say, that's where we were. Even one of my own colleagues was killed at a distribution. The airdrops are chaotic. Every time they try to bring in trucks, it's chaotic. And certainly the GHF is singularly disorganized, reckless, dangerous. And we cannot help but come to the conclusion that these are deliberately set up death traps for those who are starving to survive with a bit of food aid that they can grab hold of.
I wanted to get your response to the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, who's calling on the U.N. to collaborate with GHF. He spoke on Fox News.
The president has been telling us he wants food into the hands of hungry people, but he wants it in a way that it doesn't get into the hands of Hamas. That's exactly what we did when we stood up GHF. It's an American-based operation. It has the support and cooperation of the IDF, but it's not under their control. And the result has been pretty phenomenal. Over 106 million meals served at 4 feeding sites. The immediate plan is to scale up the number of sites up to 16 and begin to operate them as much as 24 hours a day.
You know, it's interesting, Avril Benoit, is that it was the U.S. Itself, a U.S. agency, USAID, in July, found that there was not evidence of Hamas taking, stealing the food. But can you talk about what was there before the U.N.'s 400 aid distribution sites? Why were they shut down for the 4 of GHF?
So Israeli authorities have been striving to discredit the United Nations effort since long before October 7th, of course. So they had roughly 400 distribution sites. It was working reasonably well. You did not see starving children begging for food and bowls of slop on television up until this latest siege. And so now we have 4 sites. They're talking about quadrupling that. Sounds very impressive, but to go from 4 to 16 is not going to cover the needs. And it's not a situation where there's a lack of food. I mean, we should not be desperately begging for there to be formula, baby formula, brought in to Gaza because the mothers are so malnourished that they can barely breastfeed. We should not be begging for even the therapeutic foods to be allowed in at scale because one in four of the patients that we have surveyed of children under the age of five, of mothers with newborns, breastfeeding women were malnourished, clinically severely malnourished. So, you know, we shouldn't be, considering this anything but Israeli intentionality to deprive people in Gaza of food and also clean drinking water that they need to survive. The food is just across the border. The food should be brought in en masse by the hundreds and hundreds on trucks, quite apart from the GHF, you know, these airdrops, which are spectacular efforts at public relations, very visual. They really don't drop very much. It's just the equivalent of a few trucks. We need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trucks, all the crossings being open. And that would address this unproven, never substantiated claim that Israeli authorities and the U.S. government has been making, that it's criminal elements or Hamas that are diverting all the food aid. And if they just didn't do that, people wouldn't be starving on television. I'm sorry, the food is there. It could be brought in such quantities that you would not even have a question of needing to steal it or divert it. But again, there has not been any credible evidence that there was a systemic effort to divert the aid. People are starving because Israel wants them to. I'm sorry to say it that way, but this is the part of all the efforts in this genocide to deprive people in Gaza of the ability to survive.
Avril Benoit, I want to thank you for being with us from Montreal, Chief Executive Officer of Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, that's MSF USA. We'll link to your new report. This is not aid. This is orchestrated killing. MSF's frontline medical testimony on systematic mass casualties from GHF sites in Gaza. When we come back, as Trump vows to deploy up to 1,000 National Guard to Washington, D.C., California begins a trial that challenges Trump's attempt to control California's National Guard and deploy troops to quell ICE protests in L.A. We'll speak with the California Attorney General. Stay with us.
Se quedan mudos, otros tienen memoria para olvidar. Si la violencia es un espejo que se rompe y nuestras lágrimas caídas gritarán, solo recuerda que mi cara tiene un nombre.
Nunca más. By La Santa Cecilia in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. President Donald Trump vowed Sunday to deploy hundreds of National Guard troops to Washington, D.C., while also threatening to evict unhoused people from the nation's capital. The president directly controls the National Guard in D.C., though it's usually the governor of a state who decides when to activate Guard troops. This control is the focus of a trial that begins today in Los Angeles, where the state of California is challenging the Trump administration's attempt to control California's National Guard and deploy troops to Los Angeles in response to protests against the ICE raids. Today's the first day of a bench trial, no jury. So for more, we're joined by California Attorney General Rob Bonta, whose office is bringing this legal challenge. Rob Bonta is the first Filipino-American and the second Asian-American to occupy the attorney general position in California. In the first 6 months of Trump's second presidency, California's filed 37 lawsuits, separately filed more than 40 amicus briefs in support of other litigation against the Trump administration, and has already had some wins. AG Bonta, welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain what this trial that you're involved with in the next few hours that's just about to begin is about.
Good morning, Amy, and thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you once again. And today, as we start trial, we remain confident in our case, and our case is based on the Posse Comitatus Act and the fact that the president has deployed military personnel onto into an American city on American soil to engage in law enforcement that has nothing to do with the military. The evidence will show that the National Guard troops and the Marines have been in L.A. over the last 2 months, engaged in perimeter support, in blockades, in one instance, apprehending and arresting civilians, and all part of civilian law enforcement, which is absolutely prohibited under the Posse Comitatus Act. They are engaged in infringing upon and blocking the freedom of movement of Americans on American soil. And we will hear from military personnel that we deposed that say all this. And so we think we have a really strong case with Judge Breyer in the Northern District of California on the eve of the beginning of or the morning of the beginning of trial. And we think the evidence will support our case.
And does it matter that President Trump is now removing those soldiers, the National Guard troops from L.A. in terms of your case?
No, because while he did deploy 4,700 military personnel, 4,000 National Guard people that could be and should be doing the important work that they were doing before they were called away. They were tackling fentanyl and addressing wildfires, among other things, and deployed 700 Marines, 300 National Guards people remain. So this is an ongoing issue. We, of course, have noticed his removal in phases of a number of the personnel that were present in L.A., but this still remains a live issue. It is an issue that continues to be important in L.A. with the military engaged unlawfully in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act in civilian law enforcement. And the Posse Comitatus Act goes way back to the early days of this country, where the English and British monarch used the military to police the colonies. And so this is something that is deeply rooted in our history and our law as something that is prohibited. And Mr. Trump is blatantly engaged in this unlawful conduct.
On Friday, federal agents raided the parking lot of a Home Depot in Van Nuys twice, detaining at least seven immigrant day laborers from Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico, with rights activists warning the arrest could be violating a recent court order that temporarily banned agents from conducting sweeping immigration raids and racially profiling people in Los Angeles and surrounding areas, including targeting them based on the language they speak or their presence at a particular location or type of work. Can you respond to these raids? I mean, one raid at a Home Depot, 16 people were arrested, and they used this Penske rental truck that even the Penske company condemned.
Yeah, they rolled up in a Penske truck and started engaging in very potentially the conduct that a court has already prohibited them from engaging in. So they need to be held accountable. They will be held accountable. The court has ordered that ICE agents who, as we have seen from many images, are masked, unidentified, seemingly in plains clothes, unable to identify them as ICE agents, sometimes using vehicles where they remove the license plates, that they were engaged in unlawful actions in violation of the Fourth Amendment, using race as a factor to identify who to stop and detain, search and seize, using language or accent, as you mentioned, the location and the job or the occupation, all things which sweep in thousands and tens of thousands of innocent people. And the Fourth Amendment requires individualized suspicion and probable cause. So this may be a violation of the court order. The court order was sought in a case where we filed an amicus brief and secured in a case where we filed an amicus brief, and the ACLU is leading that case. So I know that they are, we've been in communication with them, and I believe they are considering what steps to take next in view of the court order and the potential violations of that order with these recent actions.
Attorney General Bonta, we just have a minute, but I saw you this weekend at Netroots Nation in New Orleans. You were with the Attorney General of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, as well as the Attorney General of New Jersey. And you're sort of taking this on the road, talking about the importance of challenging Trump legally. In a moment, we're going to talk about the importance of grassroots action. But you've brought more than, between amicus briefs and lawsuits, what, like 60 or 70 actions in the last 6 months. Can you talk about why you think this is key?
The Democratic AGs and here in California, through the work of my office, we are fighting back and we are getting things done. We are making a difference. We have sued the president here in California 37 times in 29 weeks, more than once a week, to great success. Out of the 20 times when an order has been issued by a court, we've won 90% of the time, secured 18 different orders. We prevented $168 billion from being improperly and unconstitutionally withheld from the people of California, a return on investment of $1 of investment, leading to $33,600 in return in protected federal funding. So it's important to tell the story of the Democratic attorneys general fighting back unapologetically, resolutely, pushing back against a president who is blatantly, brazenly, consistently and frequently breaking the law and trampling over the Constitution, and tell the story that we are winning in court and stopping him and blocking him. When we push back and fight and show courage and go to court, we win. And so that's an important story to tell. I'm very proud to work with all of my Democratic Attorney General colleagues across this nation to fight back against a repeat offender, lawless and law-breaking president.
Rob Bonta, I want to thank you for being with us, Attorney General of California. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As mass raids continue to terrorize communities nationwide, we look now at the grassroots response and the people who are organizing and fighting back. ISIS faced widespread backlash over the arrest of community advocates who've been swept up while documenting raids, including U.S. citizens. In Los Angeles, a nurse and community activist was released from federal custody this weekend without criminal charge after she was arrested early Friday morning while recording the operations of ICE agents. Amanda Trebach is a member of the group Union del Barrio. She was participating in a peace patrol outside Terminal Island, a Coast Guard base that's used by ICE and Customs and Border Protection as a hub to prepare and deploy agents for raids across California. Dozens of volunteers are routinely stationed outside Terminal Island to monitor the movement of the federal vehicles streaming in and out of the staging area. Terminal Island was once a thriving Japanese-American fishing village that was demolished during World War II, its residents forcibly sent to internment camps. Footage of Amanda Trebach's arrest Friday morning shows two plainclothes masked agents pinning her against the pavement as they kneel on her back to handcuff her. One of the agents is seen putting his knee on Trebach's head for a brief moment as a person recording yells, "Get off her head."
Get off her head!
Get off me!
Get off your knee!
Get off
her head! Get it off!
Get
off her head!
Get off
me!
Get
off
me! This is public property, sir. This is public property.
Streaming live. This is ICE beating her up. They got her knee off her head. I am where I need to be, 10 feet. So.
You guys get her in the van.
Sir, you okay?
Yeah.
Amanda Trebach is a U.S. citizen. She was then forced into an unmarked black van by at least six unidentified agents. Her release Saturday came amid pressure from activists and protests with the National Nurses United Union, describing the efforts as, quote, a testament to the power of organizing resistance and solidarity against the ongoing attacks by the Trump administration on our lives and livelihoods, unquote. From where we go to Los Angeles, where we're joined by Ron Goches, high school history teacher, community organizer with Union del Barrio, Amanda's group. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Ron. We don't have a lot of time. Can you describe what happened and what continues to happen? Amanda is one example. And ultimately, while she was detained, what got her out?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me. What happened is another intimidation attempt by the U.S. government against Union del Barrio and against the movement that's defending our community. Amanda was doing what she's done every single day, and that is to document cars going in and out of Terminal Island, which is a military base where ICE has been using for staging. And so when they had already identified her before, and when they saw her again, they strategically went at her, they attacked her, and they kidnapped her. And so they threw her into an unidentified vehicle, they took her away, and then they actually came back with her in a different vehicle, and they unlawfully went into her vehicle and took her backpack. They seized her backpack from her vehicle without a warrant, without a permission. And so this is just another example of the Trump administration and their fascist ICE agents, or whoever they are, because they're unidentified, violating the rights and breaking the law that they're supposed to protect.
Did they ever charge her?
As of now, she has not faced any charges. She was released because of the pressure of the community. They themselves, the place we were calling that was holding her, said that they had received over 500 calls in that day. So we organized the community. We mobilized people, the nurses unions, people from all over the country offered their support. And we were lucky and happy to have Amanda free. But we know that there's still thousands of our people who have been kidnapped who are not free. And we're fighting for the liberation of all of our community members who have been kidnapped by these masked, armed, violent men who don't identify themselves, who can do whatever they want. They drive around Los Angeles with no license plates. They're armed and dangerous. And that's what we warn our community about their activity, so that the people can protect themselves. Because obviously the police department doesn't protect us. The politicians don't protect us. Only we ourselves can organize and defend ourselves.
It's astounding that they're allowed to be masked. I remember when if a police officer covered their number on their shirt, there were grounds to punish them. That was just the number that would identify them on their shirt. Now they can be masked and hooded. Tell us about Union del Barrio, what these peace patrols are that Amanda was on.
Yeah, when the second Trump administration was about to begin, we knew that we didn't have the people power to cover all of Los Angeles. So we started training a lot more people, and we created a coalition called the Community Self-Defense Coalition. To now, there's more than 70 organizations that are part of the coalition, and we've trained them all to do community patrols. What that is that we drive around our neighborhoods, we look for any type of suspicious vehicles or any type of ICE activity so that we can document and then alert the community so that our people have the chance to defend themselves, protect themselves and their families from being kidnapped. And so this is peaceful work. We don't advocate for violence. We don't break any laws. We have a legal team who's advised us on what we can and cannot do. So we're really clear about what we're doing. We train people, and we're all over Los Angeles. And there isn't a corner in the city where an ICE raid can happen, where we won't know about it in less than 5 minutes. And we can deploy our members to go to document and to defend the community. That's the type of work that Amanda was doing heroically. That's the type of work that we're doing every day. As a teacher right now, we're getting ready to go back to school. This Thursday, school starts in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of fear on the part of students, parents, and teachers. And so we have to get our city ready, because we know that these ICE raids, although they did slow down a bit, they have continued, and we have to defend ourselves. We have to be organized in case anything happens near one of our schools.
We only have 20 seconds, Ron. I just talked to California Attorney General Bonta, who's brought dozens of lawsuits against Trump. Yet your organization is accusing the California police of working with ICE.
Absolutely. You know, while the legal folks are fighting in the courtrooms, we're fighting in the streets. And while they're having winning battles in the courtroom, we're winning battles in the streets. We know that what's happening right now with the LAPD and sheriffs in Los Angeles is complete collaboration with these ICE raids. They protect, they
we're
do logistical
have to leave
protection
it there, but we're
going to
do
operations.
A Spanish interview at democracynow.org. Ron Goches with Unknown Del Barrio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.